Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's For Women. You are not 9 to 5 and neither are we. Conveniently open online 365 days per year, 24 hours per day.
Hello there, and you're very welcome to the weekly podcast. It's a compilation of our best interviews from this week. Now it is Fostering Awareness Month, and Teresa Hawhey chatted to me about the joy of welcoming children into her home. She has fostered 130 children over 28 years. Aidan Gately is a Marie Kondo consultant. He shared his wisdom on decluttering our homes. And the phenomenon of the trad wife, 1950s looking beautiful young women all over social media, especially stateside. Ethna Shorthall joined me in studio to explain exactly why it is so popular. That's it for this week. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. Now, if you happen to be at Bord the Bee Abloom over the weekend, you might have seen our next guest. Teresa Hawhey was at the Tusla Fostering Garden. I was there myself, and a beautiful garden it was. And I just missed her. She is here in studio. We had to get her in to talk about fostering. Of course, it is Fostering Awareness Month. And Teresa has fostered 130 children over a 28-year period. You are so welcome. So glad you came in. Teresa, you're some woman.
Oh, well. I mean, it started many, many years ago when my eldest girl, Rachel, was 18 months old. And I had just come out of my own business and I was thinking of where I was going to go next, because with a young baby, it's very difficult to run the kind of business I was running.
What were you doing?
I was a hairdresser.
Okay.
So your hands are your tools, yeah. So you have to be there yourself. So with that, I was bringing her for inoculation and I looked up on the wall and there was a poster saying, "Do you care enough with children in it?" And I thought, here goes.
This is the doctor's surgery.
Doctor surgery for the injection, her inoculation, and the poster said, "Do you care enough?" Hadn't a clue what it was about, whether it was a voluntary role or whether it was a mother and toddler group. And I made the call, and within a couple of weeks, there was a social worker through the door, and that's when the journey started.
Wow. How was it? Because a lot of people listening today, first of all, I suppose there are a lot of misconceptions about fostering.
There is.
People don't realise that, you know, maybe years ago, I don't know, but there are the misconceptions that, you know, you have to be married, a certain age, not old enough, you can't work, you can't be same-sex couple. That is not true.
No. When I started, which is 28 years ago, they needed one parent to stay at home.
Okay. That's not the case anymore.
But that's definitely not the case now. You know, over the years, they've learned that you can hold down a full-time job. Because I always asked, you know, somebody working, what was the difference with their children to somebody not working? They still have to get baby minders. They still have to get their children to creches. You know, they still have to take care of them, do their homeworks and get them to bed and feed them. So over the years, we've learned that all walks of life, we want all walks of life to step forward.
Brilliant.
And come and help us out to foster, because there are just so many children in need and there aren't enough foster parents to match the amount of children that are there.
So the social worker walked into your house. Was that kind of weird? Because I'd almost feel under the microscope.
Well, like anything, going for any job, you're under the microscope. You know, it was something we wanted to do. So the social worker came out. Okay, you might have done a little bit of extra cleaning, you know, but, you know, that was kind of... The house was the way it was. Yeah. The home was the way it was. You know, myself, my husband and my baby girl was there. An 18-month-old is going to tell exactly what the life is like, you know, when they're in your arms crying or they're looking for their toys or whatever. So she came out and she had a chat with us and we looked at one another and we thought, we'll give it another go. And we had another meeting and we had another meeting and then we had to fill out, you know, you get certain forms that you have to fill out. They want to know what type of family you are. I always remember the social worker asking, how did you solve your first row? You know, like... That's, you know, it's negotiation, you know, the loudest wins sometimes in an argument, you know, but it's negotiation. And I found with foster children, you don't give them two choices, you give them three. If you say to a child, you know, would you like this or would you like that? They'll say, I don't like either of those. But if you give them three, they have to pick one.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, like if you wanted to get a child up out of bed for 8 o'clock, tell them you need them out of bed at 7:15, 7:30. And then when the 7:30 comes and they're giving out and they say, I don't want to get up, can I have another half an hour? You have to be out of bed, dressed and down the table by 8 o'clock.
I'm going to start that at home.
It'll work.
Because I can't get my child out of bed for love nor money. Teresa, do you remember the first child you got? Was it a little baby?
I do indeed. No, it wasn't. When I started, I was asked to do emergency care for teenagers in crisis. So that would have been teenagers that found themselves homeless or teenagers that just found themselves displaced. So the first girl I had was, she came to me very briefly for a very short time because her mum had met a new guy and the families were emerging and she felt she was being used as a babysitter. And she was staying in friends' houses to avoid going home. And that parent rang to say, listen, this is not fair to this child. We need her to be placed. And she came to stay with me. And things worked out over a period of time, you know. But the children that were on Care in the Street, they were the ones that really suffered. And they would decide they were going to come in, they were going to come off drugs for 6 months, and they were going to try live at home again. So they would come to me. And I remember one girl coming to me and with a social worker, and she was real bald. She's standing outside the door smoking the cigarette and she wouldn't come near the house. And, you know, next of all, I put the telly up a little louder because I knew she liked Coronation Street. So Coronation Street was coming on the telly. So I could see her pricking the ear and coming around so that she could see the telly. I left the hall door open, the sitting room door open, and turned the telly so she could see it. And I said, would you like a cup of tea or coffee while you're watching, you know, the telly? And she, I said, well, is that tea or coffee? And she said, I'd love a cup of coffee. So gave her the coffee and she stood leaning. And I said, look, it's lashing out. I said, would you like to step in? I said, into the hall. You don't have to come into the house until you're ready, you know. So that negotiation went on and on and on for the whole of Coronation Street. By the time Coronation Street was over, she was in the sitting room eating the biscuits, having a cup of tea. And, you know, she decided then, I said, would you like to see the bedroom you could be staying in? Because these children are coming into a home that they don't know anybody in at all. So, they're 13, 14 and 15. They know their world. They know who they are. You know, they just haven't got the love of somebody to take care of them. So she went up the stairs. She looked at the room. Of course, she obviously liked the room. Came back down. She said, I'll stay tonight, you know. And tonight stayed the next night, stayed the following night. We got her into the Foss was back then. Yeah. So we got her into Course and Foss, you know. And she, once she could begin to trust us, you know, then she relaxed and asked to do more things, you know.
Do you know what, though? It is all about trust, isn't it?
It is.
Because yesterday on the show, we talked about Barry Kilgan. He was in foster care with his brother,
He's
Eric.
He's amazing.
He is. For 13 years. And 13 different foster homes he was in over his childhood before his grandmother could take him back. And what he talked about was the fact that not knowing where you belong, the fear of being somewhere else, the traumatic experience of lack of security. And that's what foster carers like you give the children, isn't it? Security.
A little bit of love, a lot of love, some security. You know, they get back to going to school. They get back into routine. They get back into eating meals. You know, I never asked a child what they liked. I always asked a child what they didn't like. So I never gave them what they didn't like, you know, and therefore they would eat their dinner. You know, they'd look forward to the next meal because they knew it was going to be something they liked, you know. And as I said about that young girl, like, you know, we ended up bringing her on holidays and she had great fun and dancing with my, you know, my eldest girl then, which I think she was about 7 or 8. Yeah. And I had a younger child, you know, which was younger. She would have been about 3 at that stage. And, you know, to see the three of them up dancing, you know, she could have been doing that with her own siblings.
So they become part of your family while
Absolutely.
They're with you.
Absolutely. Yeah. They were never treated any different. Yeah. You know, to the fact that most people didn't even know I fostered for years. They always thought they were friends of the children. You know, they always thought they were friends of the children. But when that girl was leaving me, she left a note under the pillow, you know, because she wanted to be independent. She was moving on. Would you like me to read that for you?
She left a note and you brought it in.
I did.
Please do.
So this is from her. Okay. She washed away all my pain away, and how I do not know. Was it that she knew, or was it that she felt she had to? I came with all my pain, ready to have to fight again. But she still gave me a warm smile and held her arms open wide, and she took me by her side. I could feel the wall around my heart breaking, the wall that I thought I would never stop making. I didn't know why. I didn't know whether to laugh or cry. The wall around my heart is now gone, and I still don't know how or why, but all I know is that it takes someone very special to make me feel special.
That's so lovely. She wrote that.
That's
and she
her,
didn't even tell
didn't
you.
Didn't tell me. I was, when I was cleaning out the room, the note fell from, she actually put it inside the pillowcase. So as you do when a child leaves, you come back in through the door, tears streaming down your face, your heart is breaking, but you're not long in through the door before the phone rings again and it's another child needing that space for a little while to get them settled into another.
You see, I think I would find it so difficult, especially you had one of the children, I think, for 4 years.
That was my last girl. Yeah, I did. And she came to me out of a foster placement and she did her intercert with me and then we discussed what she wanted to do because she was very independent and she wanted to be independent. She just wanted to spread her wings and fly. So it was hard to keep her with us. And then she decided she was going to do the leaving. And she did the leaving, and God love her, you know, she was now thinking about her own apartment because she was going into aftercare after that. And COVID hit. So she was stuck with us for another year and a half, maybe. And then she finally went to her own apartment, and she's doing really, really well today. She actually went back home to spend time with her own siblings and her mum for a while. So you can reconnect. You know, they do reconnect with their own family. It's just giving everybody the space they need at the time they need it, and a helping hand.
I suppose you have to have that mindset at the outset that, you know, they're not yours. But I mean, have you ever taken in a little baby, very small, vulnerable, and you nurture that child like your own?
Well, I've a story. I got a phone call one night at about 10 o'clock, baby coming. And I thought, OK, Beth out of the attic, down the stairs in front of the fire, because she'd been in a car all day. So you can imagine she would have been soiled and everything else. This guard stood at the door, and he was about 6'7". He was huge. And I opened the door and he says, "Is the foster mum there?" And I went, "I am the foster mum." He said, "You're having a laugh." "No, you're not." And I said, I don't know what he thought foster mums looked like. You know what I mean? But anyway, we got him in, and he came in and he said, "God, I can't believe you're a foster mum." And I said, "Yeah, I know I am." And he helped me bath the baby. And
did he?
Yeah, he did. And I went and got the bottle, and my own two children were upstairs. And he had a peek at my own two children fast asleep in the bed. And he says, "God, how do you do it?" And I said, "Well, if I don't do it, who will?" We need more people that are willing to just step in and do what's needed at the time it's needed. Children going to hospital, their parents mightn't be able to get up every day. You know, they might need somewhere to stay when they come out of hospital. You know, nowadays, the community that we were reared in, as you know.
Yeah, like it takes a village and all
that. Yeah. And that's fantastic.
But it's not really there anymore.
You don't know your neighbour anymore. You know, now I know a few of mine, but you don't really get to know who's down the block, where they always helped out in years ago. That's not there anymore. So you could have somebody coming from another country with children, and suddenly they get sick and they need someone to take care of the children.
Because we often think, no, you're so right, and we often think of fostering, we think, oh yeah, they're abandoned, the children are abandoned because of reasons. That's not always the case. And that's very important to say. No. But what's it like to have a small baby like that little baby you took in? How do you emotionally deal with giving that baby back?
Well, you're rearing your own to give them wings to fly. So while you have that baby in your arms, it's getting the love, it's getting the care and attention. I had to run between Our Lady's Hospital and the Coombe to get breast milk, because the mother only wanted breast milk for the baby. So she'd extract some breast milk, and I'd get the rest of the breast milk from the cuddle mums and Our Lady's and the cuddle mums and the Coombe. And, you know, then my mum, who's a very wise woman, came to me and said, "Okay, you're running ragged, every second bottle, give it pet milk and just see if there's a difference." Baby thrived. Mother was delighted. Mother got the rest she needed, and baby went back to mother. And between mother and her sister, it became a relative fostering placement, and baby went on back to family, and it was amazing. I got a phone call from the social workers about a girl I fostered, and she had come into difficulty after having her child, and she said she'd put him into care if I took him. And I had him for a couple of years. We did mother and baby kind of routine, and we tried to help her get back on track. And he then was fostered onto a family of long term with guys in it, so he could wrestle, because we were a household of girls. So it was only the boyfriends of my children that would be able to wrestle about with them, you know, and that kind of thing. And he's thriving. Yeah. And she's thriving in her own little world. Meet up with her every so often. We go for lunch, you know, and she's really trying.
I think it's fabulous that you have such great stories, but I'm sure there were trying times when you had children.
Very challenging
as well.
Times, yeah. You know, very challenging times. But no ask was too big. You know, there was really no ask too big. And I always say, there for the grace of God go I. And until you walk in somebody else's shoes, you just don't know the tragedy that they're facing or the help that people need. Yeah. So that's kind of, and we need everybody in all walks of life to come forward.
Because you've retired now, have you?
I have. Well, I have retired, and here I am sitting here. I have. Yes, I have. And my own health isn't great at the moment, so I need to take time out.
Sorry to hear that,
my own girls want to be able to do stuff on the spur of the moment. And you really can't do that. You need to plan things when you're fostering, which is not difficult when your children are young, because you're planning all the time, you know. But that for them to say to me on a Friday night, "Mam, pack a suitcase, you know, we're going somewhere." that's where they want to go
I suppose you have to do it. We just have lots of texts coming in, and I'm not surprised. Maura, thank you for having this amazing guest. I didn't catch her name as I joined mid-conversation. I am in awe of this foster mum and commend her for her huge heart and humanity. She's really making a colossal difference to so many young lives at such a vulnerable time for these kids. It's incredibly selfless of her, and I hope she acknowledges how many lives she has helped and to fly and soar in ways. And now she's crying in front of me here. The world needs more of this kind of love. And you know what? To be honest, Teresa, by the way, her name is Teresa Hoy, for this person that got in touch. We do need more people like
we
you.
Do.
And you have helped so many people. But you know, when you think about it, children, you get them in babies and different things. What about siblings and separating siblings from foster homes? That must be very difficult.
Well, you'd get the phone call, can you take a group of siblings?
Yeah.
You know, I tried never to part siblings. So, I mean, I remember one time many years ago, there was I was doing a respite case for two teenagers, and I got a phone call the weekend they were to come to me for three siblings. And I said, it was only for the weekend. And I said, listen, if they don't mind all helping one another out, I'll give the teenagers the option. Do they want to still come to me? They might want to come the following week. And the teenagers said, no, we're dying to go to you. So we all went to the zoo. There was snow on the ground at one point. But actually, there were seven children in the household at one stage. And I have to
say, seven foster kids?
No, two of my own.
And five foster kids?
Three of one family and two of another.
And where did you put them all?
Well, the three siblings took the box room. The two teenagers, they were delighted to just come that weekend. So they didn't really have to have their own bedroom. They said they'd bring sleeping bags and sleep on the floor.
You know what? Isn't that great, though?
But when you think back to your lifetime and your friends would stay over, not everyone had a bed.
That's so true.
So we all want foster children to have their own bed and their own room. Don't get me wrong. My box room was the foster room.
But the thing is, if you think about that, the most important thing, if somebody needs shelter, love, food, care, and a warm house with a fire, that's it.
But that is the criteria. And somebody that is really willing and really wants to make a difference to children's lives. You know, people think about it for a long time, you know, especially young mothers who have maybe two babies at home and saying, God, I'd love another child around seven, eight, nine, you know, years of age. This is the time to do it. If you're thinking about it, step forward. If it doesn't suit the household and doesn't suit you, you're not going to be forced to continue. But if you don't try it, you'll never know.
Yeah. And what would you say just to people listening today that might have reservations? A, maybe like, oh my God, what about foster kids? If I bring kids into the house and they mightn't get on with my own kids, or they might have problems. How do you, first of all, have all that love to give? And also, how do you mitigate between your own children and the foster kids? I mean, is there a secret to foster caring?
My kids were very good down through the years. I wouldn't have been able to do it without them. You know, and signs on, my eldest child has gone into social care. You know, she's now managing a role in social care in residential.
And that's because she was brought up with foster children, you think?
Well, yeah. And she saw the choices, you know, she saw the difference she could make. You know, my youngest girl went into banking, you know, again, management role, working with people, and has also become a celebrant. You know, so like they saw what making choices when they were younger, you know, it kept me on the straight and narrow. You know, it sometimes, you know, you'd be thinking about doing this or doing that or doing the other, and you'd go, no, I'm going to another child now. Ground me again.
Really? So you feel it's a grounding experience that you get as much out of it
blessing.
As they get?
Huge blessing. When my mum got sick and I had to take her into my home, you know, not that I had to, but, you know, that's where she wanted it. Of course, it was easy done. And I wasn't able to foster at the time. And just before my mum passed away, I get a phone call, Teresa, we need you for a particular child. I says, great, no problem. My mum said, take it. I'm not going to be here much longer. And I took this little guy and I made a phone call at 12 o'clock at night time because I knew some of my friends, you know, love going to the markets and that kind of thing. And I said, if there's anything, cots, prams, buggies, bottles, anything, this little lad has come to me and I have nothing because I gave it to make room for my mum. I'd departed with all the stuff thinking I'd never gone back to fostering. 2 o'clock that morning, there was a knock on my door and it was one of my very good friends who loves doing the markets with cot, pram, three of her daughters with clothes from her children, bottle, sterilizer. Unbelievable. And I'll never be able to thank that family. Those girls, they're just amazing.
Brilliant.
But that's the type, that's what happens with the family when you start fostering. Your friends come aboard, your family comes on board. I'd get a phone call on Christmas, you know, Christmas week. How many have you got for Christmas? How many more presents are we buying?
Brilliant.
You know what I mean? And everyone just rallies around.
you know what, Teresa, you have really painted a lovely picture, and you know, it's done as much for you as you did for those children. And I love that. So just as just to wrap, just if you want to get in touch with Tousley, you can do that, and they provide basic training. Of course, you will be Gorda vetted, but most people can foster. It is not a closed shop. Couples, single people, people with disabilities, provided that the disability or medical condition, you know, would not prevent you from caring. People with or without children, unemployed people, those over 40. So really, to be honest, it is a wonderful thing to do, and you have done a wonderful service to those children, but to society in general.
Teresa Hoy,
thank you so much.
It's
been an absolute pleasure.
And Tousley.ie, that will get you into the, that will get you there. It will get you there, and your journey can begin.
Fair play. Thank you so much, Teresa. Yes, Guest is amazing. Everybody needs someone like Teresa in their lives, says Orla in Cork. There's a lack of empathy with many people these days, and the world needs more people like Teresa, like that foster mum. The note the girl left that she read out here for us says it all. She is a modern day saint. Teresa, a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Take a little break. Back in a moment.
Email Oliver at rte.ie.
Now, I picked this guest myself for me, really, and it just so happens that you guys are going to be listening in as well. Aidan Gately joins me now on the phone from Wales. Back in 2020, he swapped his life and stage for a life and stuff. He's on the line now to share how he's going to sort my life out and everybody else listening this morning who have a bit of an issue with decluttering and with too much stuff. Aidan, good morning.
Morning, Maura. How are you?
I'm not too bad. Aidan, we said you swapped your life on stage for a life of stuff. Tell us about your past life first. What did you do?
Yeah, so I like that line, actually. I'm going to rob that. So yeah, I did performing arts in college way back when. And so I did a few kind of jobs, professional jobs around the place. I worked for Disneyland in Paris for a little while as well. And then I came back to Ireland and I worked kind of for kind of almost the last kind of 15 years before COVID in arts marketing. I was in Borgosh Energy Theatre before that. I was in Dreux, the arts centre out in Blanchardstown.
Great.
So,
okay.
Yeah, I was always kind of behind a desk and doing stuff I loved. I've always loved and always will love theatre and tickets and everything. But yeah, after a while, I was like, I need something else and I want something more physical and where I'm kind of in contact with the public a little bit more.
Right. Yeah. So you watched a Netflix documentary and then you discovered Marie Kondo. She tell us about her, just for people who are listening. I mightn't know.
Yeah. So Marie Kondo, she's kind of, I call her the Japanese tidying guru. So some people will know her from her Netflix program. Her first book was The Magical Art of Tidying Up. And her kind of tagline is spark joy. So she's all about kind of asking yourself when you're decluttering and tidying, does this thing spark joy? Do I want it in my life? So, yeah, I watched her Netflix program or watched like the first episode and straight away was running in to refold my T-shirts in the way that she kind of recommends, which is kind of in thirds. Mine was already folded, kind of a bit of a neat freak, I suppose, anyway. But her system did work. It creates more space in your drawers. It's easier to see your clothes, etc. So, yeah, I got obsessed, I suppose, then in a nice way. I bought her book. I read the book and that really kind of resonated with me. It felt like a lot of the things kind of she felt and did throughout her life were similar in a way to mine or something. So, yeah, really loved her book. And then,
but you went further, though. You became a Kondo Marie consultant. What is that?
Yeah, so I was on her website one day and realized, wow, there's a consultant tab and you can click in here and you can actually train to become like a Marie Kondo consultant so you can help people do this. So yeah, so I a KonMari consultant is somebody who uses Marie Kondo's method, which is the KonMari method, to declutter their houses, because I suppose around the world there are a lot of professional organizers and declutterers, but there's only about 600 KonMari consultants worldwide. There's only about 5 of us in Ireland, so it's quite a niche kind of thing. And she has a very kind of strategic, simple to follow method that we like to think makes tidying up your house easier. It helps you not rebound. So it's very kind of strategic in that she tidies by category and not by location. And that's one of the main kind of differences, I think, as well. So yeah, so once I found out that, wow, I could do this potentially as a career, I signed up to do the course. It was supposed to happen in London in May of 2020, which didn't happen, but we pivoted and we did it online kind of instead, and that's how it all kind of started to roll for me.
It's interesting, as you said, there are 600 of the KonMari consultants in the world, or KonMari consultants in the world, and there are only 10 men, but 5 of them in Ireland. I didn't know Irish men were that tidy, to be honest. I haven't met many of them in my life, but you're obviously
well, no,
one.
There's about 10 male childcare consultants worldwide. No, there's only 5 regular childcare consultants in Ireland, and I'm the only male.
Oh, you're
one
the
in
only
Ireland,
male. So. Oh, okay. Right.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So it is.
Anyway, tell us a little bit about it. You're telling us about the method. How do you sort this out? Because I've got texts coming in already. Hi, Maura. I moved into a new home in 2019. I still have boxes and boxes not opened and sorted. There are 2 rooms in the house that hold these boxes. I cannot motivate myself to start cleaning or clearing. I feel overwhelmed. They look unsightly too. That's from Esther. And actually, for me, as a person who gets overwhelmed every time I look at a pile, tell me and help me how to get through this. What do I do?
Yeah. Well, I suppose recognizing where you are first, and what I love to do with people is get them to that place where they're not overwhelmed, because their homes should be a sanctuary and they should be a place of peace and calm when we close the door in the evenings. So that person, Esther, who has those boxes, in some ways, she's starting from a really good place, because actually she now has her clutter already boxed up. So literally just takes it box by box, you know. So what I'd be suggesting, because looking into those rooms, she's getting overwhelmed because there's so much stuff. So what I would say first is, you know, forgive herself for it happening, because we're all humans and we all accumulate stuff. So what I'd do before she even takes out a box to go through it, I'd get some more boxes, empty boxes from your local supermarket or cardboard boxes, whatever you have, some stickers or some post-it notes, and put them keep, donate and recycle. Because what you want is, you don't want to pull out a box, start going through it, and have nowhere to put the stuff. Because that's all clutter is homeless stuff. It's really, really simple. So what you need to do, and anybody else listening as well who has that tidy, messy kind of press or drawer or room or garage or whatever, so get 3 boxes, get 3 even just bags, keep, donate and recycle on them. Have your normal waste bag as well beside you. Then take out your box and put it on the kitchen table, the dining room table, even on the floor, and go through each item one by one. It's not a quick thing. You won't go through a whole room in the morning, but you'll be amazed how much you will go through. And then just ask yourself, when you open up that box, and especially for Esther there, she's moved in 2019, so that's 5 years she hasn't needed, let's say, the stuff in those rooms. So there is a chance that maybe she doesn't need all the stuff in that room. But also, there could be stuff in those boxes in those rooms that are really sentimental to her, stuff that she's forgotten she has and that she loves. So as you take it out, ask yourself, does it spark joy? Is where you would say, do I love it? Do I need it? Do I like it? Do I want to wear it? Do I want to use it? Do I want it in this new home, in my new life kind of going forward? And if the answer is yes, it goes into keep. And if you're kind of doubting yourself and kind of going, I'm not sure, trust your gut. If you're not saying yes kind of straight away, then it's time to gratefully let it go without any guilt, without any shame, and put it into the donate or the recycle section.
That's interesting. You see, I read that book too, that Spark Joy one, and then I lifted up a dress that I had forever and I said, okay, does this spark joy? And it didn't spark massive joy, but I kind of then started thinking of the history of the dress, where I bought it, that I got it on a sale. It was an expensive dress, and I just put it back where I found it. So that's my issue. But you help people with clothes, with all sorts of things. How do you do this? Is it mostly clothes or is it other stuff? Is it kitchen or bedroom, or how do you manage it?
Yeah, so it depends on the person. You know, if somebody wants to do a full, what Marie and the KonMari method does is a tidying festival. So that's where somebody will come to me and say, look, I want to tidy everything in my life, all my possessions. I want to do it once and for all and never have to do it again. And that's a tidying festival. And that one I love doing, because that's where we literally start with somebody's clothes and we go to all of their clothes. And it's very strategic. We don't move on to the next category, which is books, until we're finished clothes. After books, we do all of the paper in the house. Then we do all of the miscellaneous items, which is kimono, which includes everything from DVDs, CDs, like swimming goggles, hobby items, right down to the food in the fridge. And then the last thing, and maybe your dress needs to live in this section, is the sentimental items. Because, you know, what's sentimental to me, what's sentimental to you is different. Some people might think a chair, and correctly, is sentimental for them for family reasons. Somebody else, it might be beer mats or key rings or something. So anything like that, like if I'm working with a client and there's something sentimental in clothes or books or paper, we just push that to the side. We make a little area and we say, we'll come back to that at the end. Because by the time they've kind of joy checked and gone through all of the other items in the categories, when you come to their sentimental items, it'll be easier then for them to decide if they want to keep it or let it go. You know, and Marie Kondo and this method and what I do with clients, it's not about minimalism. It's that you don't have to get rid of everything. I always tell my clients, look, you can literally keep everything you want in your house and we'll just restore it better. But they never do. But you need to give people that permission to keep stuff, because it's, and that's what I kind of tell them as well when we're facing into a pile of clothes, or even, you know, when people come to me and they don't have time for a tidying festival, it's like, let's just tackle the wardrobe because it's overflowing, or the kitchen. I said, look, just look at this pile of clothes or look at the kitchen, and it's a kind of a, like a treasure hunt. Let's make it fun. Let's find the things you love and you want and you need. And that makes it just, you kind of flip the psychology on it and it becomes more positive. Instead of looking at it thinking, I have to get rid of half of this, and you already feel bad for yourself. So flip it the other way, find what you love, and then it's just about gratefully discarding the rest. Because as humans, we accumulate so much stuff. Some of the things we buy for ourselves, but other stuff we just accumulate from other people, we never give ourselves a chance to kind of curate it ourselves. Yeah. You know,
Caroline got in touch with us. Caroline Finn, she says, I can see the difference in photos of my house pre and after Marie Kondo method. She loves it. Another viewer got in touch here. Hoarding has become an absolute nightmare for me in my home. My partner has stuff absolutely everywhere. There's no floor space in any available space in any other room. The sheds are full. And the house and the farm is full. The sheds and the farm is full as well. I'm snowed under, but he won't let me get rid of anything. A lot of it is stuff like tools, good things, etc. But I feel totally helpless. I physically cannot shift the items, and mentally I am done. Any help greatly appreciated. How do you deal with that when somebody else that you're with or living with or married to or a partner, that they have all this stuff and you are not like that, but it is really impacting your life?
Yeah, no, I feel for Caroline there especially. And I suppose the first thing to say is, and we don't know them personally, but hoarding is kind of now, and if that is, it might almost be a hoarding level of accumulation, you know, and that's kind of now recognized as a mental health condition. Not to kind of make it too serious or whatever, but like sometimes people need a little bit more help than just me. You know, you might need a little bit of kind of psychology kind of going in there as well, you know, because for sure, by the sounds of it, if I was Caroline, I don't know how I'd cope kind of every day. And so another way to think about it, I think, is quite interesting, is sometimes, and not to generalize, but with men, if we can come explain to them, God, you're losing so much real estate. Like, by the sounds of it, if Caroline calculated up how much the percentage of each room that is unusable, you know, there, it sounds like 50% of the house they mightn't be able to use because of clutter. And when you think of it, like, God, we're paying a mortgage and we're paying rent on, like, I don't know, 120 square meters of a house, a three-bed semi, but actually we're only using 60 square meters of it. It's such a waste of space, and we're paying for a space that we can't use.
I don't think people realise those sometimes, and I know hoarding can be an issue at a higher level that you need help with, but I think there's somewhere in between where declutter becomes so much, or clutter becomes so much, that it's almost a semi-hoarding. You don't realise it. You were talking about a tidying, what is a tidying festival? And I know there is one person we got in touch with to chat to us today, Nisha Stewart-Kelly. You were Aidan's case study during his training, and you had a tidying festival, or you actually were in a tidying, how do I say this? You participated in a tidying festival? You were part of a tidying festival. Tell us about this tidying festival.
Yeah, I guess that's what you would say. I participated and did a lot of the work, but guided so brilliantly by Aidan. I had recently moved into a new house. We were getting new wardrobes. And I suppose I was at a point in my life where I knew I needed to get a system in place. And I hadn't had a system up till then. So I suppose I was lucky in that I was starting from scratch with all of my possessions. And we'd only been in the house maybe 2 years, I'd say. But I'm also organized to begin with. So I didn't have one of those kind of big hoardy rooms with possessions everywhere. I had found places for things, but they hadn't really found, as Aidan would say, a proper home or a system. And that's really what Aidan helped me with. So we started with my clothes. I went around the house, took every item of clothing out of every wardrobe, went to the attic, got the winter clothes, opened the suitcases, took everything out. And I would have lots of different kinds of, like most people, you have your sportswear, your summer stuff, your winter stuff. We went through all of it. You have to put it all into one space. So the bed looked like an absolute, it did look like a hoarder's room for that few hours. Everything got thrown in and we started to go through it. you know, using the method, and started to fold things and put things back into the drawers and presses in the particular way that Marie Kondo recommends.
And does that work for you, all that folding and all that, Nisha? Does that, do you feel it works when you fold all that stuff? It seems to me it takes a lot of time to fold all those bits and pieces, but does it work long term if you get to have that method down?
Well, here's the thing, right? You've got hanging space as well, but I have a toddler. I don't have a whole pile of time now for folding stuff. But the thing is, if you have the discipline of the system that you put in place, you will find that when your washing is done, you take it out, you quickly fold. Like, I'm in such a habit of folding towels now the way I should and stick them back in the press. It's never a big job again. Like, it's a big job once to do everything. And then after that, you're only overfolding one pile of washing. So
that's actually
really
very interesting, Nisha, isn't it, Aidan? So basically, you taught Nisha the way to do it properly once. And then it was just following on, not letting it all go cracked again, falling around the place.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's kind of like a lot of the people we work with in Home Rescue as well on the TV program. It's about getting the house back to a base level of functionality of where it works for somebody. And I love making things pretty, but it has to function as well. But once you get back to that base level of functionality, and 9 times out of 10, people just have too much stuff. It's not about buying more storage. It's literally reduce the amount of stuff you have. And then, as Nisha said, then when you do a wash, you're only putting away one wash. You know, when you're putting away a book, when you're going to look for your tax returns, you know where they are. You know, there's stats now to show that we lose like 2.5 days a year looking for lost items. Like, so if you're one of those people looking for keys every morning, like, you could spend 6 months of your life looking for stuff, when actually, if you just give everything a home, like, it just makes life so much easier, both psychologically, physically, mentally.
That's so true. Caroline Fenn got in touch with us earlier on, and she used the Marie Kondo method. She's actually on the line now. Hi, Caroline. Good morning.
Good morning, Maura.
How are you?
I'm great, thank you.
Are you pure, serene, sparking joy all over the shop?
Oh, sort of, yes. One of the main things I took from the whole thing was surround yourself with beautiful items. Like, I had 6 children at home at one point, and you kind of put away nice things. You're trying to keep them safe. And then in a blink of an eye, 20 years has gone, and something lovely, they never saw it because you were minding it for them, but they've gone.
That's a very good point.
So I put out all my pretty things around the house. Like, I have teapots in the kitchen that we wouldn't really use a teapot, but we store all our keys in it. So the teapot is on the windowsill, but everyone's keys are in it for the car and things like that. So you kind of surround yourself with nice things. I found that a great pick from the whole thing.
And Caroline, it's a great idea that you've made items that were just sitting there gathering dust multifunctional. And that's really great, isn't it? And that actually, you feel good when you do stuff like that yourself, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I think it's lovely. And my own room, it's very minimalist now, but on my cupboard doors, I hang little evening bags. There's just little decorations. I probably will never use them, but they're pretty.
You know what? You sound great. I seriously want to change my ways here. I have so much stuff. Actually, somebody else got in touch with us, an image consultant called Maria Macklin. She says most people buy clothes on a whim. They fill their wardrobes with clothes that they don't like, suit or need. Over time, we spend about $500,000 on clothes, an average of 20% of which we actively wear. Understand your personal style so you buy the right things to begin with. And actually, that's what Caroline is saying there. She's bringing out the nice, pretty things that she was sparing, as we say in the country. Caroline, where are you from?
I'm Dublin originally, living down in Meath.
Are you living down in Meath? Yeah. Well, I'm far more probably country than you then, but I mean, there's kind of a country thing of sparing stuff. And I even say it to my child, I go, spare that. I'm like, what's wrong with me? Come on. Am I expecting something bad to happen? But Aidan, isn't it true that people actually, you know, they put stuff away like Caroline, and all of a sudden they don't even know that it's in the wardrobe and there's clutter everywhere?
I love that Caroline said that, and I'm well done for doing it, because that is the lovely part of what I teach people as well. At the end of decluttering, is kind of when you get to those sentimental items, it's like all those things that we often have in the attic or that we put away to keep safe, they're the things we love the most. So absolutely, especially after the kids have gone, or even before if you can in a safe way, take them out so you can see them, because they're the things that kind of spark the joy kind of for us. And I've talked to people kind of before. Yeah, exactly. And it's kind of, I don't know, there's this weird thing about, like, my parents are from the country, from Roscommon, you know, the good room, the good parlour that was kept, you know, with the good crockery, the good crystal, the alcohol that was only ever opened up if the priest called or for Christmas and stuff. And in tiny little two-bedroom cottages with seven kids, and you're like, this makes no sense. And I think there's still a hangover from that kind of, we're constant. And I think COVID has taught us in some ways, but we've kind of forgotten again that, like, we just don't know what's going to happen tomorrow or next week. So, like, keeping the thing, keeping the good church or the good crockery or the good knives, like, just, I think, use them now.
You're right. Caroline, is there something you'd like to ask Aidan there, Caroline, after you've gone through the method? Is there anything now that you've got a real live consultant at your disposal for a few seconds?
I have to confess, Aidan, I have a room which my husband did pass away, and we've a lot of stuff in a room now, you know, and it's just a room that's not being used. Just stuff in it, and my boys, some of them have emigrated and all that, so we have a bit of a room like that in the house. The rooms that we all use, the communal rooms, are all fairly Marie Kondo'd, but you know, we kind of waste a bit of, it's a terrible disgrace in this day and age, but you know, we just need to kind of go again, I think.
I know what you mean. Yeah, well, sometimes it takes, you know, a lot of the clients I work with have something like that in their lives. You know, my own dad is in a nursing home, so we are, you know, soon going to be tackling kind of his clothes left behind in the house. So it's something that can't be rushed. You know, allow yourself to be okay with that being like that for whatever amount of time. And I think when you're ready, and maybe you're now ready, you know, when you're ready to do it, then it becomes, you kind of start thinking, oh, maybe I can do it. And just approach it with kindness and compassion towards yourself. And again, treat it like you did every other room. You know, just take things out slowly, take regular breaks. Just ask yourself again, do you want it? Does it spark joy? Do you want to keep it? And keep as much as you want to keep, you know, because life is tough at times. So don't be hard on yourself, but go through it. And there might be things in there now that you would like to bring back into the everyday part of the house. And then kind of maybe think, well, what use could I use that room for? Do you want to, you know, turn it into like what they call now an analog room? So it's for reading, it's for listening to music. There's no TV or something, do you know? So kind of think what you'd like that room to be used for. And that will kind of give you a purpose and motivation for it as well.
Caroline, when did your husband pass away?
During COVID, he had, you were mentioning esophageal cancer there, he had that.
He was
only 55.
Oh my goodness, that's so young.
Yeah, young man. Yeah.
It's very difficult. And, you know, it's really interesting. There's another a listener who got in touch with us here, Caroline, and you might relate a bit to this. A woman got in touch and she said that her mother passed away and she was very close to her. They were great companions. She was involved in her care. And even though she gave away a lot of her stuff, she still finds it really hard. She's got a lot of cards, memorabilia, probably mass cards. And she feels kind of guilty about parting with that stuff. And that's another thing, Caroline, that you probably can, you know, resonates with you this morning.
Yeah, I kept some stuff, and then my boys, they're away, but I, you know, kept clothes and things and gave some away, but then they said, oh yeah, we'll hang on to that. And then you look at it in the cupboard, like, we're 4 years on, sure, nobody's ever going to wear things like that. But, you know, there is a clutter there that needs to be cleaned out. There is, but I need to do the big Marie Kondo on that too.
I think you're great, though. I think you're on top of things, and you sound like you know what you're at, which is fabulous. Nisha, you're still with us there?
I am, yes.
I was reading here that it took, was it 36 hours for Aidan to sort out your sheet music? Because you're a classically trained musician and play at weddings and the whole lot. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, I had an office upstairs that was the box room in the house, and I was fairly organised to begin with, but I had all these box files from IKEA and shelving units. And I suppose with the digital age as well, I'm starting to migrate all the sheet music over to iPads and things like that. So I knew I could start to get rid of an awful lot of the music and the duplicates and the various different combinations and string parts and flute parts, and I didn't need all of it anymore. So I started scanning and we started going through everything, and I think we reduced, like, I think it was about 18 box files down to about 7.
Yeah.
Got rid of so much sheet music. And then in the middle of it all, I got pregnant, so the office had to go to the attic. But
you know what? It just shows you, though, that it's so important to be kind of organized, because when different things happen in your life and you have to actually really tidy up and make room for the actual cot or the child will be sleeping on the pile of clothes on the floor or on top of the sheet music, you needed to get organized. So it was great to have Aidan in your life. Nisha, thank you so much for being with us this morning. Aidan Gately as well, who is a decluttering expert. Can I say that about you, Aidan? A Marie Kondo consultant, yeah. And also Caroline, one of our listeners, Caroline Finn, who called in. Can I just end on this, Aidan, just while I still have you captured? Alison Clomel got in touch and she said, I recently saw an article where Marie Kondo says that now she has three children in her life. She is embracing messiness in her home. Spending family time with her children is what sparks joy in her life. So with the best will in the world, you can't be perfect. Would I say that that's right?
Yeah, I think, a lot of consultants gasped when she said that around the world, or the Guardian took it slightly out of context. But I think she's realised now at child number three that, I suppose, before she had children, she probably was a bit of a perfectionist and a minimalist. And now she's kind of realised, actually, you know, kids and life comes with stuff. But so it's about enjoying life. But I suppose I always kind of go back to the kind of adage that kind of, you know, an untidy house can be tidy. So Marie or anybody else or me, you know, if I have somebody coming around for dinner at the weekend or whatever, you know, I can tidy up the house pretty quickly, half an hour, 20 minutes, an hour maybe to Hoover as well, because I know where everything is going to go, because everything has a home. Whereas
I think the whole thing is everything has a home, isn't that it? We have another listener here from Sally Noggin got in touch with us. Good morning. I had a huge lot of nightlight holders, 20 to 30. So this week, I boxed them up to declutter. I put them up on Facebook and a lady collected them yesterday. So still more to do, but feel a lot better. So you can actually spark joy by sharing your stuff. I mean, as I always say, you're kind of whatever is somebody else's treasure. So that's so
treasure.
True.
Yeah.
Guys, thanks so much. There's so many things
Brilliant.
You can do.
No problem at all.
Right, Aidan, I'll be calling you privately on the old mobile. Leave your mobile there with the team, so I'll be calling you to sort out my life in every way when I finish the show. Guys, thanks so much for chatting to us this morning.
Thank you. Brilliant. Thanks for having us.
Fair play. Will you take a little break now? And we'll be back in a minute.
Email oliver at rte.ie.
Now, on to another thing, something that I have become slightly obsessed with, I have to say, in recent times. If you think apron chic, scones in the ovens, the pleasures of embroidery, lots of beauty, and taking care of your husband in every way. We're talking about trad wives all over Insta, all over TikTok, really all over TikTok. So to tell us all about trad wives, we have trad wife herself, no, I'm just joking. Ethna Shortall is in front of me here in studio, author and columnist. Ethna, you're the antithesis, I think, of a trad wife, nor than myself.
Well, I don't know. Like, I, you know, the trad wife is, well, I suppose, well, I start with what it
is. What is it? Yeah.
Before
it's not,
I see
it's not
where
like
I could
homemaker
identify
regular.
With her. Yeah. No, it's definitely not. A trad wife is, well, so far, thankfully, it seems to be mainly an American trend. But they are women and they're posting on TikTok and also Instagram. And they believe in ultra traditional gender roles, that the man's purpose is to go out and earn money for his family and the woman's purpose is to stay at home, keep a nice house and mind her kids. But it's not, we're not talking about stay at home mothers here. This is far more, and it's an ideology, and they do believe that the man is the head of the family and the head of the household, and that the woman should be subservient to him. They're generally very religious. They're evangelical Christians or Mormons, and they're kind of living, I guess, what looks like a simpler way of life, and they kind of present themselves either like 1950s housewives, and they're very dolled up, and, you know, they suggest that you should put on makeup and do your hair before your husband comes home, and don't pester him about the worries of the day because he's out working, or they go full like Amish country and they're wearing head to toe floral frumpy clothes and bonnets to match, and they're literally churning their own milk.
Yeah, they are. But, you know, I follow a few of them now. One is Esty Williams. You know, she's this blonde, and you talk about 1950s, very young. What I notice is that these women are really predominantly in their 20s. So she's this almost Marilyn Monroe lookalike. And she is saying all this stuff that you got to get up in the morning, do your beauty. And it's like, this morning I made scones. And then I put 1 hour aside for my beauty routine, my nails. It's perfection.
Oh, I know. I fell down a hole for several hours last night, and I came across her as well. And one of my favourites of hers was this thing about how she was doing her makeup and she was saying, my husband's home soon and he likes my hair like this or whatever, and she was getting ready, And someone in the comments was like, oh, I'd love to be able to do this, but it's hard when you have a toddler and you're pregnant. And she replied, she's like, yeah, I don't have kids yet myself, but I do know other moms that get up at 5 a.m. so that they can, you know, put on makeup and nice clothes. Blessings.
So it is kind of out there. Yeah, but there's another one that, another one of these trad wives, and her name is Nara Smith, and she's married to that Calvin Klein model, Lucky Blue.
Lucky Blue, yeah. And he's a Mormon. His family are, kind of, I think, quite strong Mormons. So yeah, and they're married and they have 3 kids now. She's very young too. She's a bit of an outlier, I would say. She doesn't quite fit in. Like, her kitchen is very modern, very sleek. She's not white, and they're all, the rest of them, you know, generally they're very white. Like, you know,
she's South
very
African,
conservative.
I think.
Yeah, she's South African and German, I think. Yeah, because she speaks German as well. I wonder if she is trolling us all and that she is very knowingly doing what she's doing, because I just cannot believe it's real. And it kind of looks like a slick art house film, and that's what makes it so appealing, especially to young women. It's aspirational. But I wonder if she knows, because like, she has videos and she'll say, my kids wanted some cereal, so I set about making it from scratch. Like, making cereal from scratch, you know, embrace modernity and the good things this gave us, which is like a ready-made box of cornflakes, you know?
Yeah, well, it's funny because an awful lot now, in recent times, I've noticed that a lot of psychologists are writing about the dangers of this type of content online, and that it's, you know, showing younger women especially that this is what they should look like, or this is what they should aspire to, as you said, this aspirational, especially with Nara Smith, because she's so beautiful. She's kind of making like cookie dough, and I was violently wanting blueberry muffins. And so, as you said, with that monotone voice.
Yeah.
But I actually was talking to a few younger women recently who love her and follow her and want to be her.
I mean, I couldn't stop watching her. I can see like how you just, because she is beautiful, you want to look at her. And it does, it feels like a movie or something, but it's not real life. I mean, I think she has 3 children and she talks about feeding them, but they hardly ever feature in the video. Mm. She's making, like, her husband wanted to go out for a burger, so she made him it from scratch, including the bun. I think it took 3 hours. I'm like, you'd be on to your next meal. This makes no sense. And nobody that is also minding 3 children can spend 3 hours making a burger from scratch. Like, it is, you know, if I'm cooking and I have the kids there, it's like, make the quickest thing, you know. A 3-hour meal is the kind of luxury, a luxury endeavour if maybe someone has taken the kids out for a few hours.
Yeah, it's true. Now, when you talk about these trad wives as well, there is a lot of men, of course, talking about this. Recently, that NFL player, what's his name? Kesley?
Harrison Butker, yeah.
Now, he came out very strongly. He was actually, he gave a speech there at a Catholic university, and he talked about the vocation of a homemaker and how his wife has basically decided that her life wasn't complete until she gave in to this and is a complete homemaker.
Yeah,
and he gave a speech to young women at this university.
Absolutely. Like, it was a conservative Catholic university, but like, even within that, I mean, these women have just put years into doing a degree. And he was saying, I mean, the speech in general was, you know, very right wing, and it talked about the tyranny of inclusivity.
Yeah.
But he was saying to those women, you know, some of you might go on and have careers, but you know, he, like, I can't remember exactly what he said, but I feel sure that, like, you're mainly, you'll be looking forward to your real vocation, which will be being a wife and being a mother. And she's like, and he's saying how his wife's life didn't begin until she embraced her vocation of, you know, marrying him and having their children.
It's very funny, actually. His speech was kind of changed up by Katy Perry as well, then on Insta.
Oh, right.
Oh yeah, she did. She kind of put in and changed everything. Somebody got in touch with us. Their Handmaid's Tale comes to mind. Margaret Atwood has warned us. Do you think that this is dangerous?
Yeah, I think, I mean, you know, from my own position in Ireland, I'm watching it, and, you know, it doesn't have an effect on me. But they are huge on social media. They're not really selling themselves to people like me that, you know, are already out in the hustle, having kids, whatever. It's younger women. And they are saying things like, you know, don't believe that you need independence. They really advocate going straight from your parents' house to your husband's house. They question, do you need a degree? If you know for sure that you want to be a trad wife. I mean, education isn't just about getting a career. Even if you don't end up working, it is good to know things. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them, we fought for decades for choice, for female choice, and you're trying not to undo that. And you would worry that this kind of thing, to aspire to not really thinking for yourself is not great.
Mm, you know? I think there's a petition now to fire that NFL player. 160,000 people have signed that petition, but he's still there. Do you remember in 2001 a book came out, and I remember reading this book at the time. It was called The Surrendered Wife by Laura Doyle, and a similar conversation around that movement was talked about at the time. And it was similar to this, but it was basically that women should surrender themselves totally and just let their husbands lead.
Yeah, I think like probably every, you know, 10 or 20 years, something like this will come around. And it's probably a response to whatever comes just before. I would think now, like, you know, like, maybe it's appealing because the hustle seems endless. It's impossible to have it all. Like, that is definitely a myth that people have pushed back against, that, that women can have it all. You know, you can't. You could probably have it all at about 60%, you know.
Actually, that's interesting. Somebody just got in touch with us there by text. I don't advocate the trad wife, but I do think some women would like to be able to stay at home and raise their children, but the cost of living has made this prohibitive.
Absolutely, yeah. And I would agree with that. I can see the value. I've spent stints of being a stay-at-home mother and may do that again, and I can see the real value in it. But it's really hard. Like, it is harder than working. That is not what these women are depicting. You rarely see the kid. I didn't see any of them, you know, scrub a toilet or do any of the less enjoyable things. I don't even see them washing up after doing their cooking. They're just showing you the kind of the best of the best.
And I wonder, do they have help in the background? Because as you said, especially Nera Smith, her online content is very like a studio.
Yeah, and generally they're talking about not working. But the thing is that actually by posting this content and having large followers, these women are working and they're doing that most modern of professions, which is influencer, you know. Mm-hmm. So this is work. I mean, some of them do ads, sponsored posts, and I don't know, I wonder too if the pandemic played a part, because we all went back somewhat to simpler times. We were doing more baking, we had more time in our home, we were maybe doing more DIY, and that to me anyway started to be quite appealing. I definitely became more house proud during the pandemic, and so maybe if you are getting a very sanitized version of what it would be like to stay at home all the time. And it's not actually about the staying at home bit. It's really not. It's about the views that go way beyond that, that are more insidious. I think that's where the problem lies. It's this idea that you should be subservient to your husband, you know, that he's in charge and he makes the decisions. And, you know, that's the bit that's actually worrying.
Yeah, it's 51551 is our text. I'd love to hear if we have any trad wives in Ireland. As you were saying, Ethna, really it's stateside that we see most of the content coming from. And I haven't really seen much kind of anything from even a European side of things, from the UK or...
We have like stay-at-home mothers on social media, and I follow loads of them, and it's great.
That's
like,
different to
yeah,
these guys,
exactly. And they're talking about really useful tips on how to actually balance everything, and you know, recipes and all that. Although I will say, the first time I came across the trad wife, someone was telling me about it, and I went and looked it up, and the woman was literally churning her own butter, and I was thinking you could just buy it in the shop, but. While I thought it was bizarre, I also came across a good recipe that she had for biscuits that I saved. So,
yeah. I don't mind the kind of churning. And we're only a generation away from the land, really, most of us in Ireland. So I think that, and I know that I grew up churning butter. I am a trad wife. No, but as a child, because that's what we did and it was the country and we kind of had to do it, really. But the other side of things is, I suppose, is the kind of pushing of that. I think we might have to, well, we listen to Esty Williams. Now, this girl, because she really is, she looks like a girl. She is the kind of epitome of the 1950s Dolly kind of Marilyn Monroe.
Today, I'm going to be talking about the trad wife movement. So last year, when I first got my voice on TikTok, I made a video on what is a trad wife. And in that video, I said that it's not a movement. And now I want to take that back. I can see clearly that this is much, much more like a movement than I thought it was. There are so many men and women using their social media to promote and showcase traditional gender roles because they are valued. In a world full of chaos, there is a shift happening where people are becoming more resilient and rebelling against that chaos happening right now.
Well, that's what she's saying, almost what you were talking about earlier on, the simplistic life, rebelling against chaos that's happening now. And maybe COVID did have an effect on this.
Yeah. And I think like there are cultural commentators in America talking about this. I mean, I guess I don't take it very seriously because, you know, I'm removed from it, but that are taking it more seriously because they're there and they're linking it to the far right. And they're also saying it's, you know, it's part of a very conservative movement that is also, you know, banning books in libraries that have the word transgender in them, or, you know, that is really like that they're promoting those ultra traditional gender roles in maybe a more dangerous way as part of a bigger agenda.
We're getting texts on this. Brainwashed by men for his seemingly easy life. What happens when he leaves you for a younger model is following them, not encouraging them, which Katie says is true. And this, what we were discussing, I suppose, that is the worry. That is almost like the perfect life you'll walk into. You can just sit around, paint your nails, do your hair, and that's all you'll have to do. But being at home, as you know and I know as a mom, that's not what it's about at all.
That is not what it is about. I mean, no. And that's what I'm saying. That kind of content is useful. And maybe like we're just more practical and realistic in Ireland because you do get influencers that are talking about the real life of juggling everything, you know, as a stay-at-home mother. And we don't have this kind of sanitized or, you know, like uber indoctrinated trad wife phenomenon that they have in America. I mean, I think we might just have our head on our shoulders
a little bit more. Yeah. Oh my God, I feel sick listening to that trad wife piece. My mother had to give up her job when she married, of course. That again is not that long ago, where women had to give up their jobs, especially the civil service, or if they were, we have worked so hard to get away from this. I feel sad to hear about this movement. The trad wives in America on social are ultra religious, and this is the only way in their lives they can earn their own money. You see it with them getting into pyramid schemes on social too. I didn't see that side of the pyramid schemes, but no. I guess probably that is another side of it. So maybe it is the only way they can earn money.
I mean, most of them would say they shouldn't earn money, that's not their role and that's their husband's role, you know. Or they have like kind of like literal cottage industries where they're in their cottages and they make some clothes and they post them off. But like, I just am a bit more skeptical because I just think if you have 100,000 followers, you are also making money, you know.
Yeah. Well, some of these people have over a million followers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like Esty Williams does.
Yeah, and Nara Smith, who again, I feel like she's having us all on, but Nara Smith has 7 million followers.
So, 7 million
yeah,
followers.
Yeah, she's huge on TikTok, yeah.
So she, and also on Instagram. So
right,
just it's interesting though, because you do have people stateside as well, you know, that are on the other side talking about this and the extremism you talked about as well. At Charles Sturt University, Christy Campion, she recently said that she specialises in extremism, and she said for many women, leaving the workforce to become wives and mothers has no connection to political agendas or any religious agendas, but it is personal preference. But the research has focused on this intersection between the tradwife subculture and the right-wing extremism. So ideology.
Well, there are people, you know, when I went down, the hole last night, and then you start to get things suggested to you. And there are some like tamer versions that is really interesting and useful. Like people talking about how they went from two incomes to one, you know, like, yeah. But they're looking at their family, if it's a couple and children, as like a unit, and that we work together to make an income and to mind our children, and that both those works are equal. And that's how I think. That's how I think it should work. That's how I think most stay-at-home parents work. And that is aspirational in a way, if you can make that work, you know.
Okay. My aunt across the pond was a housewife with one child. She was a trad wife. My uncle never saw her without her makeup on. She was very active in every aspect within their home. But that was in the 50s.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you still feel like you have autonomy and that you are as valid as your husband and that your view is as important, well, then absolutely fine. It's if it starts to erode that your sense of self or, you know, you as a valid human.
Somebody else says that the Kardashian fake tan, fake feminism movement is potentially the flip side of the trad wife culture.
I mean, I guess like maybe extreme capitalism is, and that's maybe what's led to it. But I don't know. I'm not that familiar with the Kardashians, so
neither am I really, but they've done very well for themselves. Esther, of course, you are an author. What do you think of that text that we got earlier on that Irish publishers just like celebrities to write books?
I mean, I wasn't a celebrity. I mean, I wasn't published in Ireland, I was published in the UK, so I can't say that was true for me. I do think there are certain areas, not in Ireland though, like I would say in the UK, if you're a kids author, it's hard to get published because a lot of celebrities are writing in the children's books domain, and because adults buy kids' books, they'll often go for a name they recognise.
David Williams.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I think that's an issue with general fiction. I don't think that is, and maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think that's an issue with the celebrity culture. I mean, non-fiction is different, but then that's because people are often interested in the life stories of people they already know.
I have to say, though, like, I've interviewed so many people over the years who are published by Irish publishers, and they were just regular folk too, who, like Karen earlier on, so did very well with that. Lots of people getting in touch about the Tradwives would make you sick. Tradwife says this person, I'm a carer, a stay-at-home mom, and life is still chaotic. It's hard work. As I have three daughters, I feel very strongly about equality, and just because I am a stay-at-home mom, it doesn't mean my husband doesn't pitch in. He's always cooking, washing up, and looking after the kids also, as it should be. We need to keep pushing equality forward for future generations and not backwards. That is true. And
that sums it up. That's a great message.
It is. It's a great message. It is true. Because, you know, lots of people are stay-at-home moms, but this is very different what we're discussing here. Look at the studies. Many women are falling into depression when they get into their late 30s, early 40s. If they don't have a family, of course they should have an opinion. But nowadays women are told that if they don't have a career or a job, they're somehow inadequate. Being a mother is the greatest job in the world. Of course, being a mother is the greatest job in the world. Ethna and I are mothers, and it certainly is the greatest job. And I would say the hardest job in the world, actually.
Not that your employees, we always say, like, we're like two ineffective, me and my partner, two ineffective managers of the most belligerent employees you've ever come across. So the children might not appreciate it, but you already, of course,
hope,
it is.
We just live in
job.
Hope that eventually they will appreciate
like,
us.
Yeah, you know, and when you, if you have your own kids, you look at your own parents and you're like, oh yeah, sorry and thank you.
I know, you're right. Yeah. On your discussion on Tradwives, it's impossible to have it all, but as a stay-at-home mum, I hate being aligned with right-wing groups like Tradwives. Well, we're certainly not trying to do that. My partner and I both decided to prioritise our kids and parents, of course. We share the caring, the housework, but I can be available for them during traditional office hours. We jointly manage the finances. It feels like our society only values money earners and spenders and don't value caring. There's no allowance made for time, taking time out to care. Well, you know what? I think it's brilliant that you can do that. I mean, a lot of people would like to stay at home, and of course they can't because they have to go out to work. But I think it is the most valuable thing to do. I know my mother was in the home when we grew up, and it was wonderful to be able to come home to that.
And I mean, and one of the, maybe not all the Tradwives, but I did see some of them saying that, like, they have nothing to do with the finances. They don't look at it. I mean, that is a dangerous position. It does not matter if you earn the money or the other person earns the money or you both earn the money. You're a unit, and like, you both are entitled to it. It is dangerous, I think, for women to have no say over finances. So, like, in the case of that text, you know, they're saying, like, obviously they do finances together, but that's not what these Tradwives are doing.
No, that's true. And it's brilliant. I mean, they do the finances together, and, you know, that's really good. And actually, sometimes it falls on one person to take care of the finances, and, you know, nobody, it just happens like that. Another awful part of this is the voice, says another texter here. Some groups are teaching their daughters or wives to speak in a soft baby voice.
Yes.
It is a thing, says Lynn.
Yes. Oh, and this is one thing that, like, the Tradwives are different. Like I said, some are Amish country, some are 1950s, some are quite modern and glamorous, but they all seem to speak in this very babyish monotone. Yeah. Like, they infantilize themselves, and they just, like, it's like they've already had a lobotomy, you know, like, and they're just speaking like they are just out of it. And I just don't think that's a natural voice. I think that's like an affectation.
So I just thought I wanted to make blueberry muffins from scratch. So I got up at 2 a.m. That type of mono.
Yeah. And it's kind of like trying to remove yourself of autonomy, personality. Yeah, it is. I think it is. That's a worrying thing for young women to be watching.
I would love, 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 love to hear if we have any Tradwives in Ireland.
We have too much cop on.
I'd love to see if people believe that this is a thing that, I mean, we, you know, Ethna and I have both admitted that we jumped down the rabbit hole looking at these women online. Tradwives, I was glued to the radio waiting to hear about the right dress for the flagpoles. Stressing about Kayleigh Vance competition, ironing shirts and packing sandwiches. These are the real Tradwives. You have put it in a nutshell there. That is so true. Now, I would suggest that you do your hair, put your lipstick on, and do not head to that fesh until you look perfect whoever you are.
Yeah, and if you have any issues with getting there, do not bother your husband with them.
No, do not. Mm. And that's it from us on the Tradwives. Ethna Gurumilamath, thank you so much for coming in. Awesome. Author, of course, and columnist Ethna Shortall in studio, sharing with us about Tradwives. Let's take a break.
0818 715 925. Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1.